Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jamie Floyd, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. The impact of the devastating storms down south even worked its way up to this area, where we had a rare tornado warning in our listening area. But for those with friends and families in the affected parts of Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, Kentucky, and Tennessee, the storms hit home even when they happen hundreds of miles away. What have you heard from the areas hit by these storms? We're going to take some calls this morning at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And joining me is Kirk Johnson, whose story on the unpredictability of tornadoes is on the front page of the New York Times this morning. Welcome to WNYC, Kirk Johnson.
Good to be here.
So you write that it looks like two of the four biggest clusters of tornadoes ever recorded in U.S. history have happened in the last 3 weeks. What, in your view, is going on? Is this global warming or El Nino, or is it just too soon to tell what this is all about?
Well, it's a very complicated picture in how tornadoes form at all. And certainly there are more tornadoes being observed now than in the past, because there are more people living in the tornado alley corridor where tornadoes form. So climate scientists and meteorologists say these numbers have to be taken with some caution because, one, the complexity of factors, and two, that we're seeing more of them. But in general, there is a La Nina pattern of a jet stream that is accentuated this spring and has been bringing a lot of turbulent air into that corridor at a time when there's also a lot of moist, warmer air up from the Gulf of Mexico, and that's where these collisions are happening to create the storms.
So your answer makes me realize, Kirk, that I need to take a step back and ask the fundamental question: what makes a tornado happen?
It's basically a chaotic collision of energies. It takes a fast-moving sort of cold system that is usually the jet stream, and this year, this spring, and then this the climate scientists I've been talking to say this is probably the central factor, has been very strong in April, bringing Canadian Arctic air in the upper atmosphere, surging into the south and in the Midwest. And when those strong winds start in any kind of circular pattern, they can pick up a lot of energy from that warm, moist air. And that's where the trouble unfolds. It's part of the mystery of these storms is that sometimes under certain conditions a tornado will form, and under other conditions that seem almost identical, it doesn't happen. So it's there's a lot of mystery.
But we do know that some areas are more susceptible than others. For example, our listening area is less susceptible to twisters. Why? Do we know that?
There's basically, they do happen almost everywhere, although that prevalent area is a huge chunk of the country between, say, the Rocky Mountains and the Appalachians. And part of the reason of that is that these two sort of air masses, air forces that I've been talking about, coming up from the south, and that moisture, warm air, and the air surging down from Canada, this is sort of a broad central area that isn't blocked by mountains, and so those air masses are free to roam in a way that they aren't elsewhere.
Free to travel. And we do want to hear from any listeners about whether they've been able to get through to friends and family in the affected areas. And what are you hearing? Call us at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. And my guest is Kirk Johnson, whose story on the unpredictability of tornadoes is on the front page of the New York Times this morning. And Kirk, I want to ask you about what seems to be a greater number of these tornadoes. It seems that more are detected now than in the past. But is that really the case? How much of that is greater strides in radar technology? Or, as you noted earlier, the fact that more people seem to live in these areas than did in the past?
It's definitely both. Radar technology picks up a whole universe of things that wasn't possible before. And then population growth and growth in the South especially has put more people on the ground. But one of the things that the sort of patterns within patterns that climatologists are noting is even as there have been more observed and observable tornadoes, there has been a general pattern of fewer kind of monster size tornadoes than in the past. There certainly have been some of those in this surge this month of really big tornadoes, but by and large, what we've seen in the last couple decades is more tornadoes, but somewhat less of the really devastating kind.
I'm joined now by David Ingram. He works here at WNYC on The Takeaway. And David, you're from Birmingham, Alabama, and you have a sister at the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa. First things first, is everyone okay?
Thankfully, in my case, everyone is okay. And for the most part, everything is okay. So we were extremely fortunate in this terrible incident that happened, but it was scary for a while because it was extremely difficult to try and get in touch with people, because in this age of technology, we're kind of used to being able to get in touch with anyone whenever we want to. And that wasn't the case here because people were losing power. And so they were losing access to things like being able to charge their cell phone or update their Twitter account or Facebook. So that night when the tornadoes were coming through, it was very scary because you just didn't know, you know, if you couldn't get in contact with them because they couldn't charge their phone or if something had happened.
Now, tell us, since you have been in touch with your family, what you've learned about their experience during the storm.
My parents live in Birmingham, and the suburb that they live in was not hit by the storms. Mm. But my sister, who lives in Tuscaloosa and goes to the University of Alabama, had the exact opposite experience. When I'm talking to her about what exactly happened, she says that, you know, they didn't get a whole lot of warning about the storms, and that the warning they did have was that they weren't going to be as bad as it turned out to be. And then, we see these pictures where there are complete blocks and neighborhoods of the city of Tuscaloosa that are just wiped off the map. And the apartment building where my sister lives and several of those around it are just completely decimated. They're just not there anymore. So we've got a lot of picking up to do.
David, while I keep you here and I still have Kirk on the phone, Kirk Johnson, whose story is on the front page of the New York Times this morning, let's bring in a caller. Charlotte from Brooklyn is on the phone. Charlotte, you're on WNYC.
Yes, I was commenting that yesterday when I was listening to Brian Lehrer, he gave a complete listing of Jersey areas that might possibly be affected by a tornado and gave us in detail just what to do, how you respond to it, if you're in your apartment, where to go, any house, and gave us a great deal of information about it. Fortunately, we weren't affected by it. And now I'm wondering, when I heard someone this morning on from Alabama, he said there was no notification. They were completely baffled. There was no information at all as to a pending tornado, which ended up killing almost 300 people. I'm just amazed at the lack of information, that there was nobody there to alert them to this devastation.
Charlotte, thank you for your call. And in fact, you raised several important points. Of course, the recovery mission down south is the rescue mission down south is ongoing, though rescue workers are now beginning what they are calling a recovery mission. So it is the count will continue, and it is going to become increasingly grim, unfortunately. And you're right, the number is now closer to 300. Yesterday, as you mentioned, Brian did at great length discuss what to do. It was a rare tornado warning, and there are FCC rules about what the radio station, any radio station, needs to do in that case. And of course, people need to listen to those recommendations, which takes me back to our guest of the New York Times, Kirk Johnson. Complacency can be a concern when the warnings are given, especially, Kirk, in a place where tornadoes, or as they're commonly referred to as twisters, are common.
I think that's definitely a huge factor in any kind of natural disaster. People in California and in earthquake zones tend to be either fatalistic or complacent about little shocks, and people in tornado zones know that these situations under which tornadoes can form happen fairly regularly, and each person has to decide how much to react when the threat is raised.
How much can meteorologists predict when it comes to tornadoes so that broadcasters can begin to issue those warnings?
They certainly are making strides, but part of the problem, as was so evident in the areas in the South, is even after a storm has formed, a tornado cell is active and on the ground, where it goes is then unpredictable. That it can leave some structures completely untouched and devastate the one next door. And so predictability to the point of precision is a long way off.
And so I guess that might account for your sister's experience to some extent, David Ingram, who says that the warnings were minimal and also did not emphasize the gravity of the tornado that ultimately came through.
That's right. And when you look at what happened earlier this week, you would think the exact opposite would happen, because for a 22-hour period, there was an active tornado warning in the state of Alabama somewhere. So you would think that warnings would be given out timely with enough advancement for people to take appropriate shelter. But, unfortunately, in a lot of these cases, you get a 10-minute warning for a 2-minute storm. So you just never know what's going to happen.
And Kirk, there are always these unbelievable stories that come out after tornadoes that seem so random, with one house left untouched in the middle of a block that has been otherwise razed, or houses that look fine but turn out to have been picked up and dropped back down in a completely different location and are no longer habitable once you step inside. What is it about tornadoes that make them so eerie and unpredictable? Oh, it looks like we may have lost. Are you there, Kirk, with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
So how they're rather precise in their activity and very eerie in the method of destruction.
Yes, I think that's a big part of the horror is too strong a word, but the sort of anxiety that they can produce. Compared to, say, a hurricane, which is a massive force that bears down on all fronts, and if you're in a hurricane, everything in its path is going to be affected. You don't know that with a tornado. You see it coming, and you have no idea. It could turn totally away from you. It could come straight toward you. It could come straight toward you and hit your neighbor's house. And that sort of complete inability to know, I think, makes it worse.
We should mention that President Obama is touching down in Alabama now. He is there to view the devastation in Alabama and the surrounding areas. And, Kirk, there was a tornado in St. Louis last week. No one there died, but the airport was closed. Several houses destroyed there. Do we have any idea why this tornado was so much more deadly?
I think they're each case is so different that I mean the ultimate heart of formation is usually a thunderstorm. Thunderstorm that sort of breeds the environment. So a particular low pressure and powerful thunderstorm just locally, even beyond these sort of larger clusters or forces, can make for a big storm.
And we want to again remind people, I'm sure Kirk, you will join me in this, Kirk Johnson, New York Times front page article for those most interested in the unpredictability of these storms, that if you are privy to warnings of the kind that you would have heard on public radio, you must heed those warnings and, of course, do exactly what you are directed to do. I want to say thank you to my guest, David Ingram, here at WNYC Takeaway, and Kirk Johnson, whose story is on the front page of the New York Times this morning. Thanks to you both for being with us.
Thanks, Jamie.
Thanks, Jamie.
And I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. The impact of the devastating storms on South was our last topic. Up next, we will talk with Susan Johnson Cook, the new ambassador at large for religious freedom.